I'm getting some really good feedback from people on the first class that it was really helpful to just understand what's going on inside the brain of our kids, because the first step has got to be understanding and compassion. It has to be, even though at the end of the day, you might have lost it. I lost it yesterday with my son. I was just like, I'm giving you every accommodation and every hand up I can possibly give you. And we're still falling apart. So we both fell apart. And I was just like, I mean, it really put me in a funk. I was like, who are you to teach this class when you are like telling your kid to go outside and move rocks because he's not, you know, but you know what? I bet you if we took a poll, more than half of you guys would be there. And what's beautiful, I chatted with a woman this morning who's going to be speaking in my membership group next month. She's on adults with dyslexia. And she was saying something that was really profound. And she said that the parents who take the time to join a membership site or to take a class like this, or to show up at night on Friday night after a long week, they're going to be okay, because that's actually what their kids need. And so I want to encourage you guys with that it's normal to have all the tools and have all the knowledge, or have a lot of tools and a lot of knowledge, and still have things go south. So, you know, there's that. So anyway, lots of great feedback. Next week, we're going to be talking about, you're going to have an arsenal of tools, of ways that are research based ways to help kids focus. But we're going to even go farther. We're going to talk about the social emotional side of things, strategies for learning at home. And I want to really stress, you know, the big picture through all of this, that, you know, having, we have 8 kids and 5 of them have graduated from high school, and they're all doing really well. You know, they all still have ADHD. They all still have dyslexia. But it's about kind of getting them through intact, you know, and getting them to understand themselves, which is really hard for people with ADHD. That it's called metacognition. If you would like to Google stuff, it's knowing how you think or being aware of how you think. And oftentimes they don't have those skills. And all of them can be taught, which is wonderful and awful at the same time, because, you know, it's like, well, no one taught me how to like learn from my mistakes. You know, why do I have to actually teach you? But that's just how it is. So anyway, so there's that just to be encouraged that we're going to learn a lot. And at the end of it all, you know, it's going to be a bumpy ride, but it's going to go well. It'll end well. So if you guys have, so what I'm hoping to do is finish in the hour, but I don't have any plans, so I can stay on as long as we like. But I'd like to get your questions answered earlier rather, and then we can just open it up for free chat. I do have 2 questions that came via email, so I'm going to start with those. And then if you want to, I'll talk about them, and then I'll open it up for questions and discussion. And then I'll answer the other one, open it up for questions and discussion. And then you guys can, of course, ask your questions. Okay. So the first question was on hyperfocus, or that's not what she called it, but her family was saying, well, your son can play Legos for 2 hours straight, so how come he can't sit down and focus on math or whatever? Right. So, I mean, that's a classic ADHD kind of paradox, you know, where our kids can focus on things that are interesting to them. So people are like, well, what's the deal with that? You know, that doesn't seem like a valid thing. ADHD can't be valid because they can focus if they really want to. And the answer to that question is that they're misunderstanding what ADHD is. ADHD is not a lack of focus so much as it is a lack of knowing what to focus on. And then we learned about the 2 sides of the brain, that the focus side and the relaxed side, and how they're competing. Well, likewise, like our kids don't know how to, they don't know what to prioritize. I read somewhere there was like, for a lot of for people without ADHD, they're like, they can pretty easily determine what's a priority and what's not. But for people with ADHD, it's like now or later. It's like, I have to do this right now or later. There's no in between. There's no like, I'll do this first and this second and that third. So they have trouble filtering out stimulation. That's a more accurate description of ADHD. And so when a kid is super interested in something or an adult, it's easier for them to filter out the other competing noises because that's something that they're very interested in. And so it's just, that is just a part of ADHD. Let me see what my notes here. Hyperfocus is also a strategy that people with ADHD will use. So, Anne, you had sent me an email earlier talking about this idea of procrastinating all week and doing a week's worth of work in 2 hours, which is how our kids kind of operate, but it drives neurotypical people crazy. We're like, are you kidding me? Like, you cannot do a 10-page research paper in 3 days. You know, you have to follow the steps. And they're just like, no, I've totally got this. I can write a 10-page research paper in 3 days, you know? And I wrote back to you, Anne, and said that how I've dealt with that with my kids is at a certain age, and you have to figure out what that age is, of letting them procrastinate and letting them reap the consequences of procrastinating, which is paper's not that good. You know, if you procrastinate, you're going to get a bad grade probably. You know, that's just how, and then, so now this one daughter that I'm thinking of with the 10-page paper that was really good for the first 3 pages. And then it was really bad for the last 7, and, you know, is in college now in her second semester. And she's finally like, I've got a paper due on Friday, so I need to work on that today. And I'm like, thank you, Jesus. You know, so do you see how it's not like you can just be like, hey, you know, here's how you be organized. You can do that, but they have to sometimes learn the hard way, you know? So that's a little bit about hyperfocus. People do use it with ADHD, do use that. They're able to use it for their benefit, like for work, or school and that kind of thing. And then there was another question, and the question was, in the first teaching, I talked about how the more you use the focused brain, the stronger it gets. And she was asking, like, if you use the creative brain more, does that get stronger and the other one get weaker? And the answer is yes. So we do want to push our kids, like whatever our kids' brains are forced to do, it will grow basically. Right. So it's like with Orton-Gillingham reading instruction. If your kids are dyslexic and they do the Orton-Gillingham faithfully, like research has shown, after 6 months, the brain is rewired. So the brain, the functional MRIs that Shaywitz did back in the, was it the early 90s, that showed that dyslexic readers, that the impulse would go in through the eye and then take a really convoluted path to the reading center of the brain. When after 6 months of Orton-Gillingham, they scanned them again and the pathway was more direct, right? So the brain, the idea of neuroplasticity and the idea that the brain can actually grow and change. And so whatever our brains are used to doing, they will get better at. And the negative is the same. Like, speaking of negative, I have a kid who's very negative. Like, he's just naturally really negative. And this is common with kids with ADHD. And in fact, I have a theory about that, but he, you know, I'm very concerned for him. I'm like, you can't go around like Eeyore your whole life. You know, you need to, like, life is so good. There's so many good things. And so I make him write down three things he's thankful for, or when he's in Eeyore mode, you know, I'll have him tell me three things you're thankful for. You know, because I don't want that to become his, or it is already his default. So, but one of the reasons why I think that that is, and I've been doing some research on it, and I didn't mention it in this week's course, but it is the relationship between dopamine and ADHD. Have any of you guys heard of that connection? So dopamine is the neurotransmitter that helps us feel happy and content. I didn't type up my page, but there is some studies that show there's an interference with how the dopamine is taken up. So there, your body's making dopamine, but it's not being like metabolized efficiently. And so, you know, you see a lot of negativity and depression in people with ADHD. And so it kind of makes sense. In fact, ADHD medications, which we're going to talk about next week, include a dopamine oftentimes. So that's kind of something that's interesting. And I'll talk about this next week. I'll get the details, but I worked with a nutritionist for a while for myself, just because I was tired and foggy headed, and turns out, you know, it's menopause. Hello. So if you have any questions about that, you can email me, because I have all the answers now. But you know, there are you can take amino acids and different things, like, and I can't remember what it's called right now, but there's serotonin precursor and a dopamine precursor. And I can't remember what they're called, but you can buy them at Whole Foods. And so, and get, and so occasionally if I'm feeling like overwhelmed, or like to the point where I'm anxious or feeling down, I can take these amino acids and feel better instantly. I don't feel, you know, I don't feel super excited. I don't feel like super brain. I just feel normal. And so I have a mental note to give those to my son next week. So I'm going to do like an unofficial experiment, and I'll let you know how it goes. Because they really do struggle. Like, I don't know, if I had a very rough last couple of years. And so I started struggling with anxiety, and I finally started taking something for it, which I didn't want to do. I don't know why. And then I did. And I was like, what? You mean it's just a chemical? Like, I was like miserable all day long, and it was just a chemical. Like, it's neutral. It's not good. It's not bad to take something to balance out your chemicals, right? And then, you know, when that situation kind of resolved, I don't take it anymore, but I have GABA that I take sometimes. So, you know, it's an interesting concept, you know, and we'll talk more about medication and the sort of like bad rap that it has, you know, and the ins and outs of that next week, because there's a lot to know. So, why don't we open up? I don't see any questions in the chat. So, you guys can just unmute yourself. You can wave, you can type a message in the chat. Okay. So Neil, where are you, Neil? Oh, there you are. Okay. I didn't see you in there. How did you decide when to consider medications? Okay. So we'll talk more about this next week, but here's the criteria that I use, and I in my research shows that it's time. When the ADHD is affecting them, like a personal level. So it's not just they're having trouble getting things done, or they're getting things done in a haphazard fashion, but they're starting to feel bad about themselves. They're not able to complete schoolwork or keep up with their assignments because of their lack of focus. If it's affecting them personally in their personal life, like they're feeling bad about themselves, they're not able to function. Maybe it's doing their job. I know my adult daughter went back to work, and she has my grandkids in Alabama. And she started taking her ADHD medication again because she just knew that she wasn't going to be able to do her job efficiently without it. So those are my criteria, because I don't really, medication, and we'll learn more next week again, is not a magic bullet. You know, if anyone here has had a kid take ADHD medication, it's dosing, it's the right type of medication, it's the side effects, you know, and it takes a lot of time to get something that's balanced. And even then, they still have to do some kind of therapy, you know, some kind of strategy, like working with a coach or working with a psychologist to help them to deal with their behavior, help them to understand themselves and to, you know, work on strategies for helping them be more organized and helping them plan ahead and so forth. So it's not, you know, it's not just like get a pill and take it and feel fine. Cause if it was, I think we'd all be lined up. None of us would be here tonight. Anne is saying, how do you practice using the focused side of the brain without fighting? Well, so that's a good question. And I know, Anne, that you have teens, and teens are a little different. You know, that's a whole different ball game, because teens, now you're dealing with people who think they know everything and they don't want to hear, especially from mom or teen boys. I know you have teen boys, and so do I, Anne. But I would say, you know, schoolwork is focused, right? And so, you know, we're having routines, right? And we'll talk about that more in a couple weeks, where having routines are really beneficial for our kids. They just know what to expect, and that you don't have that decision fatigue. There's no decision to be made. You know, it's this time of day. This is what we're doing next. This is what we're doing next. And they can choose maybe which subject they're going to do, but they're going to do it. And then really, and like finding their interests, right? If you find something that they're interested in, and that's my prayer for all my kids. Like I'll tell you, when my adult kids found the thing that they wanted to do, they took off. I've told the story about my daughter who just graduated from college with dyslexia and ADHD. And like in California where we live, you have to have algebra to graduate from high school. And so she had taken it several times and she was not able to do it. So I hired a tutor, which I highly recommend for math. And she hated it, like hated it. She would say, I didn't do my homework, so I'm not going to go. And I would be like, you get in that car and get over there. You're going to pay for it. You know, it was awful. It was awful. And so she'd go and she'd sit there and, you know, she would have a fit or whatever. But then, like, she's in community college for a year or so, and then she realizes that she wants to do physical therapy. And so working backwards from that goal, she was like, well, I need to have not only good grades, but I need to have a lot of math. And so she was more motivated, is my point. Like, she would go to the tutoring center. She would, you know, stay up late and Google stuff. She would ask for help. She got the help that she needed. And it transformed her learning experience. And so, you know, that is really, if there is any magic bullet or silver bullet, it's motivation, motivating them by their interests. So back to your question about, so she ended up graduating with honors with a science degree. I mean, like, and I watched her work through it, and, you know, I rode the roller coaster with her through her college years. But if you look at like her senior year of high school and her senior year of college, it's very different. It was not a straight line. It wasn't like a complete, you know, just steady growth. It was up, down, up, down, up, down, up, down. But she propelled herself. There is no way I would have been able to force her to do that. So finding their interests and giving them uninterrupted time to pursue those interests. I mean, those are, you know, they're working, they're focusing, right? We'll talk next week too about ways to help the brain to focus better. So if that's a better answer to your question, as opposed to how do you get them to practice being focused, would be how to make it easier for them to focus so that they focus more. So we'll talk about that next week. Katie says, do you know of any natural supplements or medication that could just help with focus, like when a certain subject has to be studied? So, Katie, where are you? Oh, there you are. Yes. And so those amino acids that I was telling you about, those are very helpful. We've used CBD in the past with some success, the little gummies that help. Sometimes it can be complex, our kids' situations, like, because sometimes there's some anxiety going on behind the scenes. And I have never struggled with mood or anxiety or anything until last year. And it was like, now I understand how crippling anxiety can actually be. What it's going on when you're anxious is that your brain is constantly in like fight or flight mode. Like you're trying to process this anxiety. And so there's not a lot of room left for other things. So with the little bit of CBD, again, it's like the it's like the amino acids. It's not like you feel really great. You just don't feel bad anymore. And so, sorry, I'm turning off. We got a new thermostat and my kids think it's really fun to turn up the heat. So I just turned it down on my phone. Oh my goodness. So I will get those to you. Okay. And in fact, I'll look them up tonight or tomorrow and I'll jot them down and maybe I'll shoot it out are you in the Facebook group? I'll put them in there. Because yeah. There's also another homeopathic thing, which I have to look it up, that my son did take for a while. That was helpful. And then some essential oils that we tried with my daughter that were, you know what I mean? Like we would be in a class, a writing class, and that she had a little roller and we'd pass it all around the class and everybody would use it. And so again, it wasn't like she was perfect, but she went from sitting sideways because she just could not get herself to focus to being able to sit up and she would doodle and focus. So you see what I'm saying? Like, I don't want anyone to think that I have, you know, some kind of miraculous answer, but there are things that can help them. And I'm, you know, it's all part of the process of them learning about themselves and what helps me. One thing that we've been doing with my 14-year-old is having him get some exercise before we sit down for math, because it takes an awful lot of focus to do pre-algebra. I mean, I feel like pre-algebra is just like the closest thing to hell on earth. And it was for me, but for people with ADHD, I mean, long division and, you know, if you don't know your math facts because you're dyslexic and you're trying to factor things, oh my word, it's just like, it's bad. But so when he rides his bike, which is, you know, both hemispheres of the brain are working, you're getting your blood pumping, you're getting oxygen, he does a lot better. And so we'll talk about these strategies more next week, but when he does, he's getting a toolbox of his own. So yesterday when he was having trouble with his schoolwork and I was like, hey, do you need to go for a bike ride? It sounds like your brain's not ready to do this. And he was like, no, because I was just outside running around. So I think I'm fine, you know? And so we did work through our strategies. And then, so, you know, we'll talk about this too, but after everything went south and we both went to timeout and we came back, we were able to use that as a teachable moment. Right. And we'll talk about that too. Like, okay, that didn't work, you know, so what are we going to do next time? I've been letting my boys have screen time in the morning, because I have found that like, if I get up early and I write and work early, I can get a lot done and then I'm free for the rest of the day, but they're loud in the morning and they're waking everybody up. So I was like, okay, you guys can go on your iPads in the morning. So we're not doing that anymore. Right. So now I'm going back in and going, what can we tweak next? That's what's next. Anna says, why to get tested, when to get formally tested for ADHD. Well, there's a couple of reasons why you would want to get tested. You would want to get tested for any kind of accommodation. So if you're in a public school, charter school, if you're in school and you want accommodations, or if you are going to go to college, having an ADHD diagnosis can help you get accommodations in college. It can help you get financial aid in college. The Department of Rehab now considers dyslexia and ADHD and all these learning disabilities as disabilities. So my daughter, who just graduated, she did the FAFSA. So she got some financial aid based on need. She got some grants from the college. And then the Department of Rehab paid everything else because she had a dyslexia diagnosis. Yeah. So ADHD. So that's why to get tested. You also might, ADHD can be kind of tricky. Like the reason we had our son tested years ago was because his behavior was very different than our other kids. So anytime you have a situation where you're like, you're really confused, like you can read the signs of dyslexia, you can read the signs of ADHD, and you can kind of be like, oh yeah, you know, but if you see some things that are perplexing, maybe extreme, or like in my son's case, we thought maybe there was some autism going on because so I've learned that ADHD and what used to be Asperger's and autism are kind of on a range. They're on a, I forget the word, it's escaping me right now, but they're on a, the same, someone help me. What's that word? Spectrum. Thank you. They're on the same spectrum. And so while my son is not autistic, he didn't have some of the key markers. He's got a, you know, profound ADHD essentially. So we got him tested because we were like, what's going on? And his dyslexia was so profound, and dysgraphia, and like, it was just a lot. And when we got him tested, we were like, oh, okay. IQ was great. Right. And then it was processing, working memory, phonemic awareness, executive functions, you know, all those kinds of things. So it can help you understand your kid to get testing. So that's what I would say. And then, you know, ADHD testing is supposed to be easy to get. When I went to get it, I was like, this will be easy. And they were just like, you know, it's hard to get a diagnosis. But that's another story. So Jennifer says, have a son with high functioning autism, profound dyslexia, and ADHD. He hates school and says no subject interests him. He says he's so bored, but I think he's overwhelmed and so down on himself. He just shuts down instead of trying, not on meds. Any thoughts? Jennifer, how old is he? You could mention. And then how long, you can hop on too, if you want to, and just, you don't need to chat, type it. I'm curious how old he is and how long you've been homeschooling. He's 12 and you've always homeschooled. Okay. Well, God bless you. Cause I've been there and it's hard, you know, when they shut down. And so, you know, you've probably heard the ideas of unschooling or deschooling. Have you guys heard of that?
Right. Yes.
Okay. Yeah. So, okay. Someone's home. So deschooling would be similar to unschooling, but deschooling would be like more temporary, but that's basically when you would back off of academics 100%. Like don't do any math, don't do any reading instruction, nothing, and take some time to just hang out and do stuff that he does like. You kind of know what he likes, like maybe he likes Legos, or maybe he likes video games, or maybe he likes his pets or whatever. And so even like I actually consulted with Sue Patterson. If you ever have any unschooling questions, go pay to consult or go scour Sue Patterson's website. She's amazing. I was like, he's just really struggling with math and it's really frustrating. And she was like, well, just stop doing it. I was like, what? You know, like I tend towards unschooling, but not that far. I'm like, no. Okay. Lisa's saying, Jennifer, I did this with my son about the same age. It was amazing how it shifted things. Lisa, would you want to hop on and talk about that for a minute? I don't know if you can unmute yourself. But that's what I'm thinking is stopping all academics without saying this is dumb or we're you know, just be like, let's, okay, Lisa, are you there?
It's exactly what you said. We started in 2016 homeschooling him. He was 9 and he was young and it was fun, right? The two of us, we just made an adventure and we were covering all the things. And then there was all these, just, there became so much resistance and anxiety. And we were working with the homeschool liaison. We've been following you since 2016, or it seems like, yeah. But long story short, this idea of unschooling and stopping everything was a relief for me. I was like, cool, somebody else says it's okay. Cause that's what I needed. I mean, it was like, all right, she said it, I didn't. Right. And, it was, yeah, we just started to get into a whole different way of looking at learning. And it was just honestly spontaneous every day. Something would come up. I was writing a check and he would say, what is that? And then we started studying checks and money. And then we were somewhere, they were talking about tornadoes and we just started like doing it very differently, sort of letting the day lead it. It was in my mind, like I was really looking for opportunities for teaching or learning or going places, doing things. And, my son is a race car driver. And it was also when he was even getting bored with that. Like that was his passion. And I couldn't even connect school around that anymore, but he's just started finding other interests. Or what I learned is he didn't see how one thing connected to another. And when he started to see why he was doing this and where it would make a difference somewhere else, or we would go down these rabbit holes, how they started to connect. Like this is more recently, what I think is so profound about this unschooling as a reflection, then I'll stop, is he was learning about World War II. And then that got into, again, he's a race car driver. So how does this affect racing during this time? And then it got into ancestry. So do you see, and there's all this math and all this other stuff in writing. And so he's such an avid learner and he wants to know. So I can just say that in stopping all the curriculum, it was a blessing. It was, so I don't know what else you want me to say other than, and then as a mom, trying to just but keep tied to what's important, reading, writing, but in all in more loose things that he connected with. And he was doing things for me, I realized, instead of doing it for him. And that was a big shift, like, because he wanted to, not because I was making him or he was trying to make me happy. So that's, now he's 14. So we have these conversations and we've sort of reflected recently because we've hit another road bump. Yeah.
Thank you, Lisa. It's interesting because what you said is what the research says about unschooling is that when kids unschool, like people are always learning. They're like, they're just not like your example with the checkbook, right? I mean, a kid's going to be like, oh, what's that? Or why do we do this? Or why does this happen? Or whatever it is that's going on in life, they're kind of wonder about it. And so that the idea with unschooling is that they are learning how to think. And they're learning how to be interested in things and they're learning how to pursue those things of their own volition instead of being led around, and forced to jump through hoops. And so last year in my membership site, the Beyond the Box, we went through this book called Unschooled. I highly, highly recommend it for anybody who thinks that they might want to even dabble in unschooling, because I do kind of have an unschooling mindset, although I do the 3 R's. It's by Carrie McDonald, Carrie with a K. And it's very well written. And there's lots of examples. There's lots of research. So I think you'll really enjoy it because it will help you to understand how that sort of learning actually really mimics what real learning is. And so, they have these schools in Scotland that the Sudbury School, where it's an unschooling school. And so the kids go there and they can take a class if they want, or they can, they have a lot of opportunities for things to do, or for the children to do things. And, they were just naturally, organically following their interests. And basically the kids would end up, like, for example, you know, wanting to learn math, right? Like my daughter in college. And so they would then sometimes choose to use a curriculum and they would learn math. But the research showed that these kids that were unschooled did no better than kids who jumped through every hoop, and they did no worse. So the idea is that they were able to get enough from unschooling their whole high school career to actually function and go on with life. And so I always hold that in the back of my mind when we get a quarter of a math lesson done, or we go off on a rabbit trail for a week and a half. And I'm like, we're supposed to be studying world history. You know, we're supposed to be studying, you know, weather, and we're just off on all these other things. That every bit of learning that your kids are engaged in, like if you were to weigh, like engaged learning has a lot more value than unengaged learning. Like you can, you know, sort of drag your kids along, which is, you know, kind of what sometimes we end up doing, because we know that it's good for them to have some discipline and to learn their math and to learn how to read and write. But unschooling or deschooling, which would essentially be unschooling for a shorter period of time, you know, with knowing that at some point you would stop doing that. I wrote a post on deschooling. So I'll send that with the email follow-up. It has a lot of ideas and tips and strategies and things to do, and how to engage and how to figure out what your kids are learning. Because like I've talked to parents who their kids, all they wanted to do was play video games, but there's not, like, in fact, I talked to Sue about this, and I was, cause one of my kids, like, you know how they would say, like, would your kid really play on video games all day if you let them? And I'm like, yes, he would. You know, like, yes, he would. I have to actually put a lot of boundaries on him, because it's very, like, for his understimulated brain, or brain that's all over the place, he can focus like nobody's business when he's leveling up. But one of the things Sue said to me is, like, she said, when kids are in school all day, what are they doing? I'm like, oh, they're sitting. And she's like, yeah. And she's like, and are they engaged in what they're doing? And I'm like, no. Right. So when when a kid goes to school and goes from class to class to class, and their bucket's being filled, you know, and half of it's leaking out, and they're getting teased or bullied, and I don't know, whatever, you know, like the whole thing that comes along with school, like playing video games is actually, there's a lot of learning going on, is what she was saying, basically. And that any interest that they have is worthy of curiosity. So you could say, you could sit with them while they're playing, right? And find out what it is that they like about it, and what kinds of things are interesting to them about it, and work from there. You know, there's a reason why video games are so compelling, and it's because the kids are motivated, right? Because they can choose like what they're going to do, and they can try different things out. So they have choice. I forget the other three things right now for motivation, because it is kind of late here. It feels late. It's not late. You guys are late.
Marianne, it's Lisa again. I can say two quick things, just because I've learned so much from you over the years. I feel so excited to be on this with you, for like this, having you like talk live is, when it comes to video games, we did this. I started just buying into whatever my son wanted to do and see where it would go, right? There was just, everybody around me was horrified at what I was doing, I have to be honest. But there was this moment where he took an entire day to teach me how to play Minecraft, which was hilarious but his ability to articulate and be patient with me and sort of switch the roles. So we've done that. And there was some blog that you wrote at some point. I know, right? But this is the thing. It was just sort of going into places that that made me very uncomfortable, or I didn't think was right, or that everybody around me was saying. And I would just surrender to it. Now, not for weeks or months, but it would be fun to see how it would come about. And so just to know that in those types of things, we would just indulge with something that was, to me, seemed completely decadent or like uncalled for or ridiculous. But this one occasion you were talking about videos, and he taught me, and it was just fun. So do you know, there was like, yeah. I didn't realize how much he knew, or like you were saying, like what was there and this whole, there was like the things he was saying and the strategies and the math he had to add box. I don't, you can't remember, but it was surprising.
Yes, it, exactly. And there's a lot of learning actually that goes on during video games. And now with, hold on, I have too many thoughts going on. I need to write something down. Some of the games, like we got an Oculus for Christmas, which is a virtual reality game, and the kids can connect with their friends or other people on it. And my son, who's 14, is profoundly ADHD and very immature for his age. And so has a very difficult time making and holding friendships with people his age. But online, he can be quirky and loud and goofy, and they might, like, they might even tell him to shut up or be quiet or whatever, but he doesn't take it so bad. And so honestly, like, I'm sitting there going, getting my notepad, I'm going social skills, right? You know, because he's getting social skills on this app and he needs them so desperately. And who said that? Nicole was saying that her son gets confidence from playing video games. And I think that's really true. I think in with, you know, we want to balance it, right? Obviously, because we don't want them, although that's subjective also, like Lisa was saying, you know, it feels very outside our comfort zone because we've been raised to be like, that's not okay. That's a waste of time. Traditional school is more valuable. But again, stepping way back, I think one of my gifts is looking at the big picture, right? Looking at the big picture is saying, hey, are they okay. Blake Bowles. Oh my gosh. So you guys should join my membership site. I'm not like one to like plug stuff necessarily, but there are some really good interviews in there. And Blake Bowles was another one. Let's see. Do I have his book here? No, I don't think so. His book is called Why Are You Still Sending Your Kids to School? But so I was talking with him and I was like, oh, my son's really into fish and he's looking up aquariums and he's doing science and reading and he's writing in his notebook. And he was like, you're missing the point completely, Marianne. And I was like, what? And he said, it's not that he's covering English and science and history or whatever, or handwriting. He said, it's that he's learning to think, right? He's learning to think. He's learning to have an idea and follow that idea and follow that interest and get information and apply it to his life and communicate it to somebody else. And so do you see what I'm saying? Like the big picture is helping our kids learn to learn. And if it's a video game or art or music or theater or work, you know, working a lot of, I can't tell you how many parents I talk to and they're like, yeah, my 15-year-old son, he just doesn't want to do Latin, you know? And I'm like, well, what does he like to do? And they're like, he goes out. He likes to help my husband with the tractors. Like they just rebuilt an engine. Like he just rebuilt an engine by himself. I'm like, how old is he? I'm like, so you know what I mean? We're like, okay, this boy is like a prodigy with, you know, mechanics, like, come on. Right. But we're so focused on, you know, filling the bucket or checking off the check marks. And I get it. I have high schoolers. I know that it's hard because we're like, there are some requirements to graduate. Right. And so, you know, we still need to follow those. Somebody, this is the thought that I wrote down. Somebody who you guys might, if this subject is of interest to you, somebody you might want to hop on and follow right away is Shauna Wingert. She has the blog called Different by Design Learning. And she's also spoken in the membership site on strength-based learning. She has two boys and they are both real quirky. Like they have some health issues. There's some autism, genius IQ, you know, just dyslexia, ADHD. They're all over the place. So she has really had to think outside the box with her kids. And what she's doing right now on her site is she's writing down her lesson plans for the week, which might shock you with how light they are. And then she's going back the next week and saying how it really went. And then today she wrote an article on how she keeps track of everything and how she uses it to count it for credit. And what's so compelling about Shauna is, first of all, she's kind of an expert in strength-based learning. And second of all, well, she's got a lot of experience, okay, three things. Her oldest son, who she thought would never go to college, in his senior year, like researched colleges and found one that you didn't need the SAT for and wrote an essay because he was a history buff. And so he spent a lot of time with history. And so he's like studying current events or I don't know. He's got, you know, found this college. He's going there. He's doing really well. And he did it himself. And she's just like absolutely stunned. But she did interest-led learning there his whole life. And his math was very light. So she has a son who's 15 and she'll make math problems based on real life for him. And that's what he's doing for math. And so she talked about today, like how she's counting that by calling it integrated math, which is what they call maybe remedial math in high school or something. But she's brilliant. And so if that's something that concerns you, now granted, was it Jennifer who was, you were talking about your 12-year-old? Jennifer. He's still pretty young. So it's a perfect time to do some unschooling. I'm talking perfect. Do you know why middle schools were started? Middle schools or junior highs were started because they don't learn anything new. They just needed a place for those darn hormones to work themselves out. No joke. You look it up. It's true. They started junior highs just as a holding place for these kids while they kind of evened out their hormones. So, you know, you'll notice that in junior high, there's just a lot of review, you know, a lot of like, you know, it's not a lot of new stuff. So that's a perfect time to like step back from maybe formal academics or pursue interests. I have so much to say about high school. I just did a huge class on high school and it's just, I have so much to say, but we'll talk about that. We can talk about that later. Dara says, agree. There are so many hidden strengths we can see when they play their games. We can use those to encourage them. It's really true. If your kid has any kind of interest, because sometimes our kids can get really off on tangents where they're really into something for a while. But if you just kind of sit and observe and make note of the strengths that they have and what they're using, I'll tell you that will pay dividends big time. You know, I have a son who's 24 now, profoundly dyslexic, 5 years of tutoring and educational therapy, and he's in high school. And I'm like, dude, like, here's an online program. here's your school. And he was just like, oh, mom, how come you can't teach me? And I was like, dude. And I just named all of his siblings. You know, I was like, Lydia, Catherine, Paul, Ben, you know, like I have all these other kids, you know, you can read now, go to your school. But the thing was, is that he was very social and he learned better by being around other people. And he would have been better served if I had maybe chosen a curriculum a little younger than what he was at and included my younger kids and done it all together. And we had a conversation and I maybe gave him something more advanced to do, you know, but he didn't learn anything. He learned how to cheat on this online program and how to, you know, like find the answers and plug them in. And I'd be like thinking, here I am thinking he has a complete curriculum. He's doing general science and he's going to know all, and he didn't learn a thing. He hated it. So, you know, oh yeah. Dara's asking Shauna Winger. Thank you, MA, for putting that link in there for Shauna's website. So if you subscribe to her blog, in fact, she has some really good planning pages on there right now that I don't use all of them, but I use some of them and I don't have it handy, but it's a great way to kind of look at where the rabbit trail ended and to make some notes. Like we're reading a book about Ernest Shackleton, which is an amazing story for kids. He's the guy who explored Antarctica and his boat got stuck in the ice and they survived, like everybody survived and they should have died, but there's all kinds of learning. So I'm like, oh, we could YouTube Antarctica and we could YouTube, you know, like the, you know, all the things. So she has a lot of planning pages that kind of help with that sort of thinking. Katie's saying, does anyone find that screen time kills creativity though? I see my boys 8 and 11 are so much more creative and kind when they're spending time off screens. And Nicole is saying, for us, it depends on what kind of screen time. Creating in Minecraft stimulates creativity. Gaming on the Xbox, not so much. And I agree 100%. And that's why, like, this whole using screens in the morning, which we have never done. I mean, my kids actually used to think that they didn't work before 2 o'clock. They were like, the TV, it just doesn't work in the morning, you know. It does. I find it's hard for them to, yeah, yes. My answer is yes. And if anyone has any thoughts, they can chime in. That's why I use it as sort of a carrot at the end of the day. You know, you have to earn screen time.
We talk about in our house, kind of being brain ready to learn.
Love that.
And like TED Eds are fine in the mornings. He can watch as many TED Eds during his wake up hour. Because it gets him thinking, but he can't do what we call junk food YouTube videos, which is watching someone else gaming and telling random stories. I hate that stuff while they're gaming, and he could just like eat that like candy all day long.
Yeah. I do not understand the draw of that at all, but my kids like it too.
Yeah. I also want to say something else just about the kind of screening and gaming. I think I'm looking at most of us. I think we're sort of grew up in a generation where we knew what life was like before tech. These kids don't. This is part of their world. So we've had many conversations and we've decided to embrace it. And like you would teach healthy eating, we're teaching healthy screen habits. And we do equate it to junk food or a well-balanced meal, that kind of something very concrete. And I use things like Minecraft to, my son's like, he can't write a paper yet. He's just not at that level. But if we did, I'll give you an example. We did a study, an art on this artist that made biomorphic shapes. So they were these very, like the outside turned into the inside that turned into the outside of the next piece. It was really, really cool. And, he said, well, could I Minecraft? And I was like, well, I said, maybe you could think about this. He's like, well, I want to build it in Minecraft. And I'm thinking, okay, how's that going to work? Because that's very geometric. Yeah. It's blocks. And he figured it out. He used motion and he created a biomorphic shape with motion, launching these blocks up in the air. So I think to your point, like finding if there's a something that they love that can allow them to create with it and express the knowledge that they've gained, then there's a positive role for tech, you know, or screens with the learning. But it like this was directly tied to an artist that I thought was cool. And I said, let's check it out. And then he really rolled with that. So,
yeah, I like that. Like they're not having a hard and fast rule, like none, but looking for ways to incorporate it because it is engaging, you know, I mean, it absolutely is engaging. And so if we can harness some of it, it's amazing to me. Like when I first saw Minecraft, I thought, I don't even really want my kids showing me. They'll be like, look at what I made. I'm like, I'm going to throw up. You know, you're moving so fast and you're going down this tunnel and I'm like, slow down. So the things that my one son creates and I'm not savvy, but then my older kids would be like, did you see that thing that Ben built? And I'm like, kind of, yeah. And they're like, it's amazing. So, you know, then there's these strengths, right? In this particular kid has extreme engineering skill, like theoretical or, you know, that kind of understanding. And so, you know, and we can talk more about the older years, but finding, you know, my goal for him right now is to find something that he loves to do. and hoping that he can, you know, latch onto that. Cause once he does, you know, he'll be able to, you know, it's that filtering out, you know, once you have a goal in mind, you know, they're much better able to focus and know what's not there because it's not the goal. But when it's mom's goal, it's like, it's not really very clear. The vision's just not there. Yes, Lisa's thanking you, Nicole, for that idea. And I talk a lot of what we do with our kids is teaching them about themselves and teaching them how to know their strengths and weaknesses. And so, for example, like after our bad math day yesterday, you know, I told my son today, I was like, okay, so I think this whole screen time in the morning situation needs to stop, you know, and let's just do an experiment and see how it goes. You know, let's just see. So it's not, because especially as kids get older, I know a few of you have older kids, but you can't just tell them what to do and they do it anymore. You know, you're more of a coach. And I read a really interesting parenting book recently. It's not here either. And he was talking about the difference between like babysitting parenting and coaching parenting and like what does a babysitter do? They keep your kid alive, right? They feed them, they keep them from running in the street, you know, and they put them to bed on time or whatever. But a coach really knows their kid or the players that they're coaching, right? And knows their strengths and knows their weaknesses and knows. And their goal is to bring out the best in them. And so the idea would be like, you know, that's our job as teenagers. We're kind of coaching our kids. We're looking for their strengths and we're trying to help them walk in them. And, you know, give them wisdom to be able to troubleshoot their own brains. And so, yeah, having them make the connection between junk and valuable stuff and, you know, is a life skill that, you know, that will serve them well. Dara says module one was great and left me wanting more information. I want to dig into the resources you gave. Has anyone had time to look at the websites or articles? I hope to get to soon. I've got a stack, but this is an incredible book. If you have an adult in your life with ADHD, like I was like telling my kid's dad, I'm like, I was like, just read through these signs here. Just read through them.
Marianne, this is Lisa again. We've been to the Halliwell Center. That's where we started. I lived in New York City for 12 years. And I worked on 69th and Columbus and Halliwell. They're right on 72nd between Columbus and Broadway. And so I'd known this through all my clients. So when my son was young, I went there. And the story is I went to get my son help and they diagnosed me with ADHD. And this is sort of how it started. Cause like, you have to help yourself. You are no good, the blind leading the blind, but his work is so really profound. And I also pulled this book to get, because it really opened up. He was the first one that said, why are you so afraid to take meds? Just try. If it doesn't work, you don't, you have to really explore. He helped us understand the concepts way back. And so revisiting it now, because we're having some issues, you know, things change. But yeah, that self-awareness, getting him to own like what's going on when he eats this, when he watches this, when he do this, because they don't, right? They're just floating all the time. Has like making him think like, how did that make you feel? And he's like, oh, I don't know. I wanted to lay on the floor and sleep after I ate, drank the entire quart of orange juice. I was like, oh my gosh, right? All that sugar. So I think, yeah, but his stuff is really amazing. Sorry, I couldn't help it because he is big smiles for me. Really, really interesting.
And to add to your point, the doctor, the MDs that wrote this both have ADHD. So they're not only are they reading or they're writing out of research, but they're writing out of their own experience, and they treat people, you know, every single day. I don't think that I put this on the resources, but it's The Insider's Guide to ADHD by Penny Williams. And I've like highlighted every single page. It's also very good. Let me see. I'm trying to think, is this, she's talks to just a ton of people who have ADHD, what it's like to have ADHD, what doesn't work, what does work. And a lot of those things we're going to be talking about. And a lot of those things you're probably already doing, but it's good to know. And I'm looking at Anne over there and I'm just remembering, like, cause we go way back to one of my very first coaching groups with these teen boys in our houses and just like, oh my gosh, what are we going to do? And it's not easy. ADHD is hard. Teens are hard. Teen boys are even harder. And so like the things that we're talking about, again, it's important to remember that you're going to go and try and use these things. And then like, sometimes they're going to be like, why are you always nagging me? Right. That's what my son is saying to me now. And I'm like, I asked you for 3 days to do this one thing. And I'm just gently like, hey, today's the day. Why are you nagging me? I'm like, I'm not nagging you. You're not doing it. Right. It's not always easy. And that's kind of like when I polled everybody, everybody wanted some support. And so, you know, but I felt like we're going to have utter chaos if we don't have some teaching. So that's why I created this group so that we can learn. And then like to just today, just bouncing ideas off, like, you know, like Nicole's ideas of media and video games and Lisa's ideas of unschooling, like we can really help each other out, you know, to, for ideas of things that might work and might help. Anne says, one of the myths that you mentioned is that people outgrow ADHD. I have a 5-year-old boy. Can you comment on the difference between normal 5-year-old boy and 5-year-old boy with ADHD? I want to dive into all these books and such, but I'm wondering if it will go away. So anytime you have somebody with ADHD who seems to have like gotten over it, or it doesn't bother them anymore, they've really just learned to live with it. You know, they've figured out what they need to do to, in order to stay focused, to show up on time. You know, maybe they use, you know, they just have strategies that work. Can you comment on the difference between a normal 5-year-old boy and a 5-year-old boy with ADHD? You know, I would look up, if you're curious about a 5-year-old, I would maybe look up signs of ADHD in young kids. Obviously there's the hyperactivity element that not all of our kids have. Like, I never thought my kids had focus issues because they weren't hyperactive. Come to find, when my daughter's 21 and she's gotten in car accidents and lost jobs and got pregnant, right? And these are all classic signs of adult ADHD. And she came to me and she said, Mom, I think I have ADHD. And I was like, what? No, you don't. And sure enough, you know, she does. And she still does. So I would look up signs, because impulsivity is one, you know, but not all of our kids are hyperactive. So it could be, you know, I think it's a lot less noticeable in younger kids because we don't have as high of expectations for organization. I know that in my kids, I didn't really start to notice it as much until they were about, you know, 9, 10, 11, when you would expect them to sit down for maybe 30 minutes and do something, or, you know, some of the normal things for a 9-year-old they're not able to do. Does that helpful, Anna? I don't know if, I would just Google like signs of ADHD in young children. Cause then they'll give specific things that they might be doing. Like I know all the signs of dyslexia in young children. It's things like having trouble tying their shoes, which you wouldn't really think would be a thing. Right. And there's a lot of odd signs of young dyslexia. Lisa's saying, I feel it evolves, different things show up as my son has gotten older. Yes, I agree. I think, and again, as our kids get older and more is expected of them, you know, it begins to show more. There was a study done. Well, So the organizational part of the brain, the prefrontal cortex that is responsible for the executive functions, which is, you know, organization, planning, self-awareness, emotional regulation, you know, basically ADHD. That grows slower in people with ADHD. So while, you know, they do continue to improve, they're always behind their peers. And so, you know, our kids are immature, a lot of them. And I guess it may vary depending on, you know, their other strengths and weaknesses, and then maybe the severity of their ADHD, because I know remember the social kid I was talking about earlier, you know, he didn't have trouble with his social skills, quite the opposite. But his younger brother, massive issues with social. And so when you think about it, if you look at the immaturity aspect, and we'll talk more about this in a couple of weeks, because the immaturity is a real problem when it comes to social stuff. Not so much when they're younger, because all the kids are bouncing off the walls and making silly jokes, right? But then, you know, if you have had a kid go through like the 12, 13, 14 years old, they stop doing those kinds of things, right? And they start being a little more self-aware, and they're brushing their hair and hopefully showering and dressing trendy and stuff. But the kids with ADHD are just still bouncing off the walls and making fart jokes and not brushing their hair, right? And so, you know, so yeah, it shows up differently as our kids get older. And I had a meeting the other day with another woman who I'm working with next week, and she was sharing about her son who is high functioning autism, which might be more like profound ADHD, and how the years from 14 to 16 were really rough, you know, they're just really, really rough. So, you know, one of the things, and again, for that wasn't really your question, but for older kids is really finding a niche for them, finding a place where they do fit in, you know, whether it's theater or animals or sports or whatever it is, trying to find something that they're good at while they're still kind of young, you know, if possible, because that's a good pool of friends. It's not, you know, where they have that thing in common. Dara is saying the myth versus truth that got me was that ADHD isn't harmless. That was hard. That was hard, wasn't it? I hesitated. You know, I don't like to be the bearer of bad news, because I'm kind of like the, you know, it's a learning difference. But to be totally honest, like ADHD, it can be very bad if it's not dealt with. So yeah, it's another motivation to just help them be aware of themselves, give them the strategies that they need, help them to find the support that they need. So we'll be talking about that. So I'm so excited. You know, I wanted to just release them all at once, you know, and just like, let's all just dive in. But I feel like it's important. I love what we're doing here, is just bouncing things around and trying things on and, you know, seeing how they fit our families. So, yeah, I'm excited. Good conversations. All right. Does anyone else have any thoughts or any questions?
Marianne, it's Lisa again. Sorry, I'm doing all the talking today. I promise not to. But yeah. I just want to say, I love how much you share, because I think it's all the variety and all the different scenarios, and like, it could be this, it could be that, and your resources. And it's just, yeah, I just want to say thank you, because you've just opened eyes to possibilities, or it's a person, or it's a thing, or leaving this group, somebody else going, yeah, I was like, I didn't think about it that way, or okay. And things, even, you know, so just thank you, because it's so many people are teaching it has to be this way, or you have to do it this way. And it's hard to be in that confining space when you're already fighting, you know, all these other things. So just thank you for your resources and your avid research and trying and sharing, because it's so inspirational to just, oh, what the heck, just try it. I mean, you know, it could be worse, I suppose, but maybe it'll be better. And just sort of that, you know, but thank you. It's really helpful because we're all sort of swinging in the wind, as it were, during the, you know, it's right. And just, I feel like you're a really good source and you always have great people, things, writing. You just, I don't even know how all you do it. I have one boy and I think, oh my God, she's got like, so thank you. I want to say thank you.
Thank you, Lisa. That means a lot to me, because I take very seriously what I do. You know, I never, ever want to come on and say things that are half-cocked or, you know, but there are really, this is a complicated issue, ADHD. Even scientists will say, you know, they don't really even know what causes ADHD. I mean, there's things that are that they noticed, like the Vernim or whatever it was with the cerebellum and the dopamine connection. And they know that it's genetic, but they don't even really know what causes it. And like with learning issues, they're very intertwined, you know, like it's working memory, it's executive function, it's processing, you know, there's a lot of different factors going on. And so there isn't one answer. So I'm thankful for that perspective, because sometimes I feel like it's the blind leading the blind. But if you guys are encouraged to try things, you know, then that's good. Because boy, and you know, I have the experience, right? I have children that I love that are struggling, that have struggled, and I've, you know, one by one, they kind of get out there and they're like, I can fly. And I'm like, wow, that's great. And then I just have this other fledgling and I'm like, oh, he's never going to fly. You know, he's going to live under a bridge. I just know it. But none of them have lived under a bridge yet. So anyway, I love all your smiling faces. This is so fun. Well, if nobody has any other questions, I will say good night to you guys, and I'll upload the next teaching tomorrow or Sunday. Actually, am I doing it? I have tech people that help me with this kind of stuff. So we'll get them up, but it'll be up by Monday. And then I'm excited for your feedback, because it's, put your seatbelts on, get some coffee, because there's a lot in that one. All right. Well, yes, I appreciate you guys too. I appreciate you guys coming and participating and supporting all of this. It's awesome. So, all right. Good night.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Good night, everybody.
Thank you. Thank you. Yep. Good night. Bye-bye. Thanks.